This is Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence, your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Be a part of the show by tweeting Matthew at RealLauro5. Backspin Golf is brought to you by French Lick Resort and Casino, Men O' War Golf, Lexington Parks and Recreation, Clark's Pump and Shop, and Dan Cummins of Paris and Georgetown. Now let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf. It went
smack down the fairway. Good morning. It's Backspin Golf. Of course, it's 8:03 on a Sunday morning from the Square Country Club. Fairways are magnificent here, except for that building that's torn down right on the other side of this Main Street fairway. Anyway, I hope you're all doing well. I hope you're all safe. Now, it's a big deal this Sunday morning. Why, you may ask? Why? Well, because Perry French, I believe, is on the phone with me right now. It's been too long again, but he's the busiest guy in America, as we know. And he's carved out a few minutes to share his wisdom. I can't get the word out, Perry, because it's so ridiculous. With yeah. the wisdom, his wisdom. Hi, Perry French.
Hi, Matthew. It's I'm sorry it's been a little time between our visits. And, you know, the golf season is, like I said, did we just have a U.S. Open in September? I don't know what time of the year it is right now.
I don't remember. It was like a week ago. I don't remember. I don't know.
The golf season has taken a unique twist, to say the least. It's just so jammed up right now. New product coming out, launching new stuff from Strixon. So it's all good. It's just, wow. It is a fast and furious run to the finish line.
Here's what I'm just curious. You have any idea, like in the last 2 months, how many miles you've put on your car? Any idea?
Oh yeah. Average about 500 a week. So roughly about, you know, 2000 is, you know, par for the course. Yeah. It's just, everybody's really busy. That's the getting people's time is tough right now. The golf courses are still very busy, as you know. People right. playing lots of golf, and that's a great thing. I mean, we're the golf renaissance has been pretty amazing to see what's happened. The newcomers to the game, people who have left the game and come back to golf in the last 6 months, 5 months, has been really pretty amazing. And from every golf course I go to, I hear just that, you know.
Yeah,
more members are playing more golf at their course than they ever have, and that's obvious reasons. But new members joining, and also this new golfer or people who've come back to golf, so it's pretty exciting. Right. I hope as a silver lining that is this in COVID, that COVID goes away and this is still there. That's right. That's going to be interesting to see what happens when it goes away. Are golfers going to be back at it and stay with it that got into it? And is their lifestyle going to change to this way? You know, and working from home will be a standard thing, and we'll actually have Zoom calls. Oh, we're having one today. Okay,
so yeah.
So, that's interesting. I really believe
that the people that kind of left playing golf for a while, and now because it's been the safest thing you could do,
right,
and have come back, I really believe they're going to stay. I think I know people that have rediscovered their love of the game and maybe don't take it as seriously as they did before, but yep. nevertheless, they are enjoying it more now. So I think that's a good thing. And I was just out at Picadome where, you know, our guys, Justin and Curtis and Brent out there, two Sundays ago, I want to say it was, had a junior tournament out there, and there were so many kids out there on the golf course with their parents. I think, you know, a lot of parents have said, we got to find something for our children to do during this time, and they've discovered golf as well. So that's actually a really good silver lining.
Right. It's very, very unique, to say the least, what's occurred. So
yeah.
let's just hope it continues, and it's great fall weather, great time to play golf. So Yeah. Keep playing, people. Keep playing.
Yeah. And, you know, while it's like this, I'd like to get my hands on my new Cleveland wedges if that could ever happen. What
that,
is this?
That
like?
Can happen. That can happen. Oh, okay. I have I think it's a greater than zero chance that'll happen by between now and the fall. End of fall, okay? All right.
I just want to play with them once before the courses are covered in snow, okay?
I got you.
Okay. All right. Now, I couldn't wait to talk to you. I haven't spoken to you because you've been working and away and busy.
Yep.
I haven't spoken to you this whole past week about what I consider to be the total destruction of the game of golf by the Hulk is how I like to phrase it.
The bulk. Yeah. He's the bulk with the B, right?
The bulk.
He's the bulk.
Yeah, with the B. That's good. But I'm really curious because you know how much I respect you. You're one of the great teachers anywhere. Yeah. I'm just saying. You haven't helped me at all, but you've helped a lot of people. I'm really anxious to hear your take on what happened. By the way, have you ever played Wingfoot?
No, but what a challenge that would be. We had that discussion. It would be a significant challenge for everybody. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the massacre at Wingfoot was almost repeated, except it wasn't Hill Irwin
shooting. Except it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, it was. One guy turned it around, and much like the media loves to clamor on his story, and he has changed the narrative. He's changed himself. I mean, this is the thing that Tiger Woods did 20 years ago, changing himself physique-wise. We all saw that happen. Why are people surprised about this? This is just a new edification of that. He has changed himself to find the next level of a game that he feels will suit the way they're playing and competing to give him the best edge. And you know what? It's starting to come together. He's proving that people that this is working for him. I can tell you this, the talent pool that's out there right now from the Morikawas, Justin Thomas, look at the stature of those two guys. Start right there. Yeah. To DeChambeau, this is not about how big and bulky you are. It's about how good you are. They're coming out. Bryson DeChambeau was a great player before he started his metamorphosis on his body.
Yeah, he was.
He knows how to play winning golf. He won a U.S. Amateur 5 years ago. He's won many times in big amateurs. The guys coming out and the girls have played so much golf by the time they're 20. Matthew Wolf, my goodness. He's right there. He's all of 22 years old. They're not afraid of what is the PGA Tour. It used to be there was a fear factor coming out to the tour, or they just didn't have the ability to take in all the travel and all the things that go with it. Now, no crowds, thousands of people every hole. It doesn't matter. It's golf, and DeChambeau showed everybody that his game will work at what he's trying to do. Surprisingly, this is a stat that blew me away. He was not the leader in driving distance at the U.S. Open, if you did not know that.
I did, but most people don't.
Right. He was number 7 in driving distance. So what does that say about the other 6? They didn't wedge it as well, didn't play it as well. The one thing that I've had discussions with some of my golf professional friends is that his unique setup with the wedge, the length of a 6-iron, that he can hit 160 yards. Now think about this in technical terms. The wedge, the lie angle of a wedge is much more upright than a standard 7-iron. Okay. Or 6-iron, which is the length of his clubs. When you're talking about playing out of heavy rough, obviously like the US Open has, and most PGA Tours have some level of heavy rough.
Right.
He has an advantage because his lie angle is much more upright and he can attack and get down to the ball along with his strength. He had a couple of shots that I remember the par 5, he hit that, I don't know, off that rough. He hit some type of hybrid club that went 270 yards and somehow managed to get to the green that most people couldn't advance 50 yards. So I think his strength is, I think while it's visually hard for people to think that he could play golf looking like that, the incredible bulk, but he has proven that. And I tell you, I laugh every time I watch him swing. He takes 3 of the hardest practice swings that anybody would ever take. I mean, I'm so tired by the time I get to the 18th hole, swinging that hard every time beforehand and then actually hitting the golf ball. So I don't know if his narrative will change how we look at golf any more than if he starts rattling off the number of wins that Tiger Woods did. If this turns into a run for the, let's go back to Brooks Koepka. How soon we forget? Is Brooks Koepka not an incredible bulk? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Weightlifting before every round. He was doing things that were not done. He was weightlifting before he played on the day. That's not done. That was never done. He's hurt.
Yeah.
How long can he hold up? He had a tremendous 2.5 year run. We know that, right? But he's hurt now. It's not the same player until he gets back to being healthy. We saw this happen with Tiger. When you get hurt, the recovery factor is just that much harder at that level of physique. So,
So we don't know if Bryson will do that.
No, we don't know if the bulk will be able to get through, crash through the barrier that is the PGA Tour for the next 2 or 3 years and just run roughshod. If that happens, if we're sitting here a year from now and he's won a Masters or another major of any sort between now and then and 2 or 3 other times on tour, and then we might start thinking about this is a really, really strong player. Right now, he conquered a golf course that certainly, as you know, and everybody watched it, it was a beast. And he conquered the beast. He almost pulled a Tiger Woods where he was the only person to shoot under par at a U.S. Open. Tiger won by 14. He won by 6. So it was very similar. I don't think Pebble Beach is as near as hard a golf course as Wingfoot.
No, it's not. It isn't. And as you know, I've been saying this, he could win everybody's afraid of what he's going to do in Augusta. If he did that to Wingfoot, well, the next two majors are both at Augusta.
Right.
So who knows? Who knows?
Well, I think we'll see. The rest of the field will be brought into play because the rough's not going to be 5 inches over the top of your shoes deep anywhere. Right. It's a different game. And that's where I think the field, will be very much a different field at Augusta that's competing for the green jacket. So,
Well, you haven't seen me for a while.
I know you missed our wedge clinic. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I had to work. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I had to work too. What?
Anyway, I have bulked up considerably. I've been on the same regimen as the bulk. So don't be shocked. Maybe next week, if you're around, we can actually sit together and talk. We'll see, but I don't want you to be shocked. And say hello to Chris Mascaro, please. He's missed
you. Hey, Chris Mascaro. I hope you're well, my friend.
Next on the tee. Yeah. Best podcast ever. Go to podbean.com. All right. Get back to whatever you're doing, and we'll talk next week.
It's called work, Matthew. Check it out. Okay.
All right. All right. Now I don't really care. All right. Thanks, pal. See ya, pal.
Be good. See ya. Thanks.
Okay. Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Men O' War Golf, the golf improvement experts.
Welcome back. It's Backspin Golf. Right here from the Square Country Club on Main Street in Lexington. We're glad you're joining us again. And I'm also really glad right now. We always talk about all the new friends from Twitter that I've made over the 7 years I've been doing the show now, I think. And here's a new friend. His name is Andy Johnson. All right, I'm just going to say hello, and then I got a bunch of questions to ask Andy. Hey, Andy, how you doing?
Matthew, great to talk to you.
Thank you. Thanks for jumping on with me this morning. All right, here's my first question. What is your obsession with eggs?
I'm not really that obsessed with eggs. I mean, I do enjoy it. It is a great breakfast food.
Yeah.
But,
yes, it is. Wait, before you go on, let me explain to our listeners. You can follow Andy on Twitter at the_woke_yolk. He's also the founder of the_fried_egg. and they're brilliant. This stuff is brilliant that you do. But explain a little bit about the names.
Yeah, so I started my company now 4.5 years ago, and it was one of the hardest things to do is to come up with a name. I think it paralyzes people. But one of my buddies gave me great advice. He said, "Just start it, and you'll figure it out later." And sure enough, we started out as just a newsletter, and I said the subject line of my first newsletter was your Wednesday morning fried egg, like, you know, fried egg lie. It comes in the morning.
Okay.
And another buddy called me. He goes, you got to call your company the Fried Egg. So that was how it started.
Okay.
And I'll give everybody who ever thinks about starting a company a little piece of advice.
Good.
Do not name it after a common food, because it makes it really hard to, you know, for people to find you if they Google you. And then also, you know, intellectual property wise, you don't really have much, because it's, you know, the fried egg.
Right.
So this is my advice. It's why all the tech companies are like, you know, Google, which wasn't a word before.
Right.
You know, it started, or Uber, you know, these. So don't name it after a common food.
See, this is great advice. This is why people listen to my show, for stuff like this. It's not about like Biceps DeChambeau, which is what I call him, and, you know, all that stuff. This is real life advice, and we thank you for it. Now, I want to go through a couple of, also we should mention, and maybe you could talk about this. The Shotgun Start is a podcast, right?
Yes. Yes. Podcast 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I host it with a friend of mine, Brendan Porath, who has been on Morning Drive
a number
of times.
And, he's awesome.
Yeah. He keeps the ship on the, you know, going the right direction.
Oh, good. Everybody, see, Sean is here with me, but he doesn't do that with me. So this is, I have a problem a lot of times. All right. I want to start. You just did a podcast with Brendan, and it's really interesting to me, because I've talked a little on, we do a daily show here called The Drive every afternoon. And I talked about this a little, but I want you to talk a little about this Danny Lee six-putt thing that you and Brendan, especially Brendan, talked about in your podcast. The people listening, I've told them to go just type in Danny Lee six-putt and you can watch it. When I saw that, I didn't understand, because it wasn't like he was shooting 85 or something. I mean, he was like, it would have been for 73 or something, I think. And can you explain a little about what happened with him and the aftermath? Apparently, Brendan got some shade from the New Zealand people or something.
So, yeah, that was one of the most confusing things of the whole U.S. Open, was this Danny Lee. I mean, people didn't know, because they didn't show it originally on the telecast.
Right.
That the clip surfaced the next morning, but Danny Lee six putts the 18th green. He was putting, I believe, for 73.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, he would have ended up, I think, around like 20th going into Sunday had he made that putt.
Mm-hmm.
He six putts. He just, I mean, and it was a six putt where he lost his mind. It was similar to Phil at Shinnecock.
Right, where he ran after
a couple
the
years
ball.
Ago.
Right. Yeah.
It was a similar, he didn't do exactly that, but it was a similar reaction.
Yeah.
He six putts. He was, after the putt he made was kind of ridiculous. I mean, it was like a 7-footer, and he just kind of just hit it and it went in.
Yeah.
And, He makes it, he goes and he slams his putter against his bag, and then, you know, shortly after, he WDs with a wrist injury.
Yeah, well.
So, obviously, it was just a strange ending, but I think it points to the nature of championship golf, especially the U.S. Open, where it can literally drive you. I think Danny Lee, just for a split second,
lost his
enough.
Mind.
He was done. Yeah, he was done.
Okay, let me have your impression of the U.S. Open. And I know we can't distill it down, but just tell me about the overall tournament, and then I'll ask you about Biceps.
Yeah, I think the tournament was great. Obviously, Bryson, the thick boy, as I like to call him.
Oh, good.
You know,
that's
similar
good.
To your nick. He it was dominant, and it kind of gave him an affirmation of all the stuff that he's been working on that has been easy to poke fun at, but
mm-hmm.
you know, he was clearly the best player out there. And right. it kind of was the culmination of this power era. I think Tiger started it at Augusta in 97 when mm-hmm. he just completely dwarfed the golf course. And here we saw Wingfoot, a course known for it inflicting pain and suffering on these players. And for most of the case, for most players, that's what it did. But for Bryson and really for Matt Wolff for 63 holes, mm-hmm. these two big-time young power players dwarfed the golf course. And, you know, their power allowed them to do so much, have such an easier time around the golf course because they were hitting, you know, it didn't matter if they were in the fairway or the rough. Obviously, it still matters when you hit the fairway, but they hit it so far that they could still power through the rough with wedges and get it onto the green in close proximity. And, you know, it's important to note, Bryson DeChambeau played spectacularly in every facet of the game. It yeah. wasn't just the driver, but the driver allowed him to do everything else so well.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really good point. I hate to admit it because we haven't spoken before, but I do not like him. I respect more than I can say what he, this is a guy that there's only three players that have won an NCAA championship, the U.S. Amateur and the U.S. Open, Jack, Tiger, and now Briceps. I mean, what he did and the work he put in, to heck with everybody, what they think. And as you say, it's a validation of what he did, but I'm an old guy, Andy, and I'm pretty much a traditionalist. I like golf that's played by feel. And golfer, I like Seve. Seve is my idol. And so I just have trouble with this whole Bryson thing and what's going to happen next to our game. Do you feel that at all, or is this just a natural progression like everything else in life?
I would say that I'm in your boat. I like the artisticness, the creativity mm-hmm. of golf. And I think Bryson is creative and artistic in some ways and in his own way. But, you know, this is a game that the game's become this because of technology.
Right.
And the USGA's failure to limit it. I mean, it's really similar. I mean, you think about Wingfoot, they added 500 plus yards mm-hmm. since the last US Open. And really, that it just was. It didn't even keep up with how far these guys were hitting the ball. And with that, you know, the best comparison I've heard is Jeff Ogilvie's talked about. Imagine if baseball, you know, allowed aluminum bats and you couldn't play baseball in the park anymore.
Right.
And
right.
that's what has really happened. Between it's the drivers, the golf ball, it's the TrackMan these guys use to mm-hmm. optimize their swing. There's no secrets about the golf swing anymore. You know, they have machines that tell them, hey, you need to do, you know, your spin rate's a little high, you know, and they know they need to do this.
Right.
They have books that tell them every contour of the break, and I think a little bit of the game has been lost. Now, it's a different game, and that's, I think, the thing is that realizing that this professional game is just different, and mm-hmm. it's different than the game that 99.9% of golfers play week in, week out.
Right. This is why I'm so happy to have you on, because you say it much, but I just go, I don't like it, you know, and you actually give a really good explanation for it. And that's always good for me and the show. Speaking of the greens books, I have another friend that you should have on your podcast. His name is Joe Duplantis, and he's one of the guys that makes those greens books. And mm-hmm. he is fascinating. I'll send you his info. But even that, and it's not obviously they all do it, but that drives me crazy. Like, I'm not getting one of those greens books every weekend when I play. I mean, just look at the green, read the putt, hit the putt. This is what I mean. It sends me on a rant all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's important to note, too, there's always been this push and pull between the, you know, golf is an art and golf is science. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, right. that's something where it's the scales, especially that have been enabled by technology, the scales have definitely, you know, leaned now towards it's more of a science. And it would be, I'm still hopeful that the USGA will do something. But, you know, at this point, I think it would be wise. I think the only real path forward is bifurcation and, mm-hmm. and doing something with different rules. I don't think any kid doesn't pick up playing baseball because pros use wooden bats and
right.
they use aluminum bats.
Right.
I mean, the idea that this is going to negatively impact the game is just insane. And from the manufacturer's standpoint, like say they change the ball. How great of a marketing slogan is, hey, buy the Pro V1. This is a ball that got outlawed. It's too good of a ball for the pros to use. You know, like that's about as good of a slogan as you can get.
Yeah, see, this is why you're really good. And if I were you, I would talk to Titleist about, well, we got to wait to see if they actually do something with the ball. But as you said, that would be something that I think would be great also. All right, before I let you go, we just had an event called Payne's Cup at the new Tiger Woods Golf Course, which is spectacular, to say the least. I mean, it's beautiful. There was a whole controversy. Gary Player, who's one of the great humans on the planet, came on, talked about they cut down all these trees, and he was very upset, which I agree with, too. But overall, I thought that it was a really fun event, again, just to see these four guys out there with microphones on and get little tidbits here and there of them cutting on each other. Did you enjoy that?
Yeah. I think these events are great. Being somebody that covers golf for a living, I just had a long week with the U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the timing of it wasn't perfect, but I mean, anytime you get to watch four of the best golfers in the world play, and the mic'd up aspect of it is so fun because, I mean, like, it's the little things. It's not as much about hearing them talk about the shots as it's as much as getting an inside lens into these guys' lives and, you know, realizing in a lot of ways that they're just like us. And I thought the Rory comment about Domino's pizza was hilarious.
Yep.
Him just casually talking to Justin Thomas about how their family's been on a Domino's kick, you know? And I thought it was just so great. I thought it was really, you know, it was just relatable. And I think that's something I think that the game and, you know, it in a lot of sports is, you know, these guys become so
canonized,
so much, and they're so brand oriented.
Right.
Like you see where you see them is you see them playing their respective sport or on commercials, and they don't seem relatable, but at the deep down they're just like us. And I think that's something that these little challenge matches provide. And I mean, you probably watched a lot of the Shill's Wonderful World back in the day.
I did.
I mean, those things are spectacular. I think, like, my biggest complaint was, like, would be, like, that thing didn't need to be 5 hours long.
That's good.
You know?
Yeah, of course. And it wouldn't be if it were around today. We all know that. But my favorite thing, comment, and we are huge Justin Thomas fans here. He's from Louisville. We're in Lexington. We've actually had his parents who are just, we've seen a lot of Mike, of his dad, but his mom, both of them are great, great people. They were on our show with us. And so we're big Justin fans. When he was getting ready to hit that shot and he said to Tiger, what do you think? Should I flop it up there or should I bump it into the hill or whatever he said? And Tiger didn't answer him. And 5 seconds later, Justin Thomas said, sweet, great aunt, good talk, thanks. I love that part of it. And you're right, that's what I would do to one of my friends. I'm not comparing myself to JT, mind you.
But it made it feel like you know, like that, the commentary, the conversation, it's like, you know what, this is just like, it makes it relatable. This
right.
is just like me and my buddies. You know,
yeah.
when we're out there having a match and
right.
talk and jawing at each other.
Right. All right. Well, you're really great, Andy, and I thank you for being on, and hopefully you'll come back on with me soon, because there's always something to talk about in golf, especially with somebody like you. Thanks for doing it, and it's great to meet you and have you on.
Anytime, Matthew, and thanks for having me on. It's an honor, and hopefully we'll meet one of these days in person.
That would be awesome. That's my wish for you and me and for so many people. It really is. Take care and be safe.
Thanks.
Thanks,
you
Andy.
Too.
Bye-bye. Andy Johnson. It's called The Fried Egg. On Twitter, it's @the_woke_yolk. Or @the_fried_egg. And the podcast is called The Shotgun Start, and with he and Brendan Perath, who's great. Just really good people. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. It's Backspin Golf, ESPN Sports Radio, 1392.5.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Edwin Watts Golf.
Welcome back. Backspin Golf, ESPN Sports Radio, 1392.5, and boy, am I happy. You know me, Sean. Usually I'm happy. But now I'm not. Now I'm really happy because joining us here on Backspin is Mark Carnevale. And anytime I like to say, well, let me say hello. Hi, Mark. How you doing?
How you doing, Matthew? How's everything?
It's okay. We have new people on the show, and I always like to give Twitter accounts and so people can follow them and stuff. And they're usually, most of the time, pretty boring. Yours is, you can follow Mark on Twitter, @MCROY92. And that stands for Mark Carnevale, Rookie of the Year, 92. That's Rookie of the Year on the PGA Tour, peeps. That's pretty, pretty special.
We have to clarify that a little bit now because it's also the Arnold Palmer Award winner, which is the award now that gives the Rookie of the Year. So
yeah,
I need to update that.
Yeah, you do. But so how do you just put it in your bio? You don't have to change your Twitter account. Well, it says 1992 Arnold Palmer Award winner as the Rookie of the Year. Okay, I get it. All right. Okay, it wasn't enough. You were the Rookie of the Year. Now it's Arnold Palmer in there too. Okay, I get it. Good. All right. I have so many things to talk to you about. Let's start with this U.S. Open at Wingfoot, I asked if you were there, and you said you did it, but you weren't there. And, of course, we're talking about PGA Tour Radio and PGA Tour Live. So were you at home doing this, or were you in a studio? Let's start there.
I was in a studio with Brian Katrick in St. Augustine.
Uh-huh.
And because of just everything that's going on, the limitations of stuff.
Right.
Quite frankly, it was pretty easy for us to do it there. It made a little bit of sense. Didn't have to travel me. Brian
right.
Katrick just drove down. And it was a great week. And it was a lot of fun. Anytime you can call the best players in the game and at an iconic venue like Wingfoot and the U.S. Open. It's pretty special to be able to do that. And whether you're on site and in this day and age over the last 4 or 5 months, I've been doing a lot of stuff from home and from in the studio at
right.
St. Augustine. So it's become quite easy. I think in a lot of cases, it's going to be a lot of the norm going forward in certain instances. So it's all a good thing.
Yeah.
As long as I'm working, it's a good thing.
That's the truth. Don't we feel that way, Sean? What I always say is if Carl Ravich and Eduardo Perez can call baseball games in Korea from their little studio, we can do this pretty much for anything. And, the coverage is so great. And I've said this a million times. I am not a fan of the network coverage of golf. I'm just not. And with rare exceptions, that goes for the announced teams especially. And I vented about it on our Daily Show and on Backspin. But you guys are fantastic. And listening to it, see if you understand what I'm saying. when I'm watching TV and somebody hits a shot to 2 inches and an announcer says, that was a really nice shot. I'm watching it. I'm watching it on TV. Or he's got about 6 feet here. I'd say it's about an inch outside the left. Just let me see the putt. I can tell what it's going to do. On radio, it's or on a computer, it's a different thing. I want you to paint the picture for us. And you guys are great at it. But does that make sense? I don't yell at PGA Tour radio when I'm listening, ever. I yell at TV all the time.
Well, it does make sense. And, you know, with radio, we don't have pictures. So we have to paint the pictures. And we, you know, dead air is not good on radio.
Yeah, we found that out. Yeah.
I learned it a long time ago. And obviously, I've been doing this for quite some time. And, you know, you look at, I sort of equate it to doing baseball on radio.
Exactly.
I mean, you're always talking. And certainly in any sport you do on radio, you've got to talk a little more, but maybe even more so now, with the fact that the fans have not been allowed back out on the golf course yet. You don't get the reaction from them.
Right.
But I was always, when I first got into this, actually doing some TV for Golf Channel.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously transitioning to radio, it was very much different because, you know, in TV and you have pictures, so less is more. When you're doing radio, more is better.
Right.
Now, you just don't talk about anything. I mean, you don't just sit there and just, you know,
make up blabber stories. Yeah.
Yeah. But you need to explain everything. You talk about, you know, what the guy's thinking. You know, his body actions, his facial expressions, his, you know, how that shot is coming into the flagstick, or what he's got to carry a bunker, or he's got to, you know, he's hitting it over a 50-foot, you know, oak tree or something like that. You need to talk about everything you see, and we have people all the time that come out and I always tell them, just talk about what you see.
Yeah,
I mean, it's as simple as that. You don't have to add anything else. Talk about what you're seeing.
Yeah, but you know what? I get what you're saying, but there are people who don't do it as well as you do, and the guys on PGA Tour Radio. I'm just saying. I understand the principle, but it still takes to paint that. You know, there was only one Vin Scully. There's a lot of guys doing play-by-play, but it takes something special. Just to finish this part of it, I said that watching, I say it almost every week, but especially in the U.S. Open, they either said the most obvious thing possible about shots, about, I mean, if you didn't know the rough was really hard and long, they told it to you every time there was somebody in the rough. Every time. That they either said the most obvious thing, or they gave some kind of opinion that I would just mute the TV. I do it all the time, and it's a pleasure to actually listen. A lot of times I'll watch the telecast and I'll listen to you guys doing the telecast, which is
certainly appreciated.
Well, yeah, it's also how some people still watch baseball games. You know, what Marty Brenneman just retired from being the Reds broadcaster. We have all these Reds fans that used to watch the games and listen to Marty call the games. Like I used to listen to Marv Albert watching when I still liked the Knicks. I used to turn the TV off and listen to Marv on the radio. Anyway, all right. So that's the part about what you do with PGA Tour Radio. And we're talking with Mark Carnevale. Now I want to get first of all, I have all these thoughts that I want to ask you about. You've played Wingfoot, I'm assuming.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, Wingfoot was the first big course I ever played. I was 14 years old.
Wow.
I played it with my dad. And I probably played it 20 to 30 times.
Yeah.
And as I tell someone, this is a tough, to kind of on a sidetrack, people always ask me, okay, you know, if you were going to play one course the rest of your life, where would you play?
Yeah.
And it's a tough question because I've got a lot of really, but to me, Wingfoot would be it. not only because they've got two golf courses. See, there's some method to my madness. There's two courses there. So, but I think it is probably the toughest, fairest golf course I've ever played.
Wow. Well, that says it. See, again, short and sweet. That's what we need to know about it. What did you think about the USGA and the setup? I know after the first day when it looked like, as a friend of mine said, they were playing in the Bob Hope U.S. Open. I know at the end of that day, we read all these things about the superintendent and the USGA and blah, 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 and all this kind of. How did you feel going into the Thursday, into the first round, about what was – did you have any idea what was going to happen?
I absolutely had no idea, but it was almost like a perfect storm in the sense of, okay, they'd had some rain prior to the event.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that has to be understood is that the fact that it was 144 players, but now remember, we're 3 months later in the year.
Right.
Normally the event is held in June. So you had about 2.5 hours more of daylight in June than you would in September.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the biggest thing is they wanted to make sure they got everybody through. Now, the first day they didn't get quite everybody finished, but pretty close.
Yeah.
Also, the conditions were perfect. And to me, it goes back to what I said a moment ago. It is a tough, fair golf course that if you were able to execute the shots properly, those scores were out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I attributed it to. Some of the hole locations might have been a little more in the middle of the greens than the USGA may have would wanted. Again, but it goes back to wanting to make sure they got everybody completed the first day, and at least
that
continued even to Friday. It was a lot tougher on Friday, but no, I didn't make much about it at all. I mean, these guys are pretty damn good, and if they hit it appropriately, and if you look at those guys, they hit a bunch of fairways, they hit a bunch of greens in regulation. The guys that were at the top of the lead, other than Patrick Reed. I didn't make much about it at all.
Okay.
You know, it happens. It's golf.
Yeah. I forgot to tell you, we don't ever mention his name, the name you just mentioned. And I call the other guy Bryce Epps or the Hulk. Pretty much tells you what my thinking is here with this stuff. All right. We only got about 3 minutes or 4 minutes left. And so here's my big question, as I said, to you, who I respect as much as anybody in the game of golf, for what your thoughts are. Talk to me a little bit about what's happened with the way he won, what he's doing, and going forward, what's going to happen? Is everybody going to have to try to be him, or will there still be guys, you know, like, I mean, Matthew Wolf hits it a long way, but will there be room for Zach Johnsons in the game, or is that over? Are we done?
No, I think it's not. I mean, golf is such a unique game, and it's such an individual game. As a player, you've got to adapt, and you've got to figure out what works best for you. I quite frankly, I thought Bryson was crazy to think he would be able to do that, the wing foot, having played it myself.
Yeah.
But I have to give him kudos.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you not applaud what he decided to do, and he was able to accomplish that?
Yeah.
And the one thing about Bryson DeChambeau, and as we've known in a very young career, is he's very calculated. Everything is worked out.
Yeah.
And this just didn't happen overnight. This was a plan of his that's been in the works for a lot of years.
Right.
I would think in a lot of ways it would be a knee-jerk reaction for not only the governing bodies, but even players,
mm-hmm,
to try to change, to adapt to this.
Right.
Who knows, you know, I mean, until it happens 5 or 6 times.
Right, right.
You know, I don't think you can just sit there and say, okay, this is going to work. It happened to work last week.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
He could go back there 5 years from now if they return there and decide to choose the same approach and it not work.
Right.
You know, there still is a certain amount of talent involved in all of this.
Right.
And well, I think that can't be overlooked.
And here's the thing. We're lucky in a way that the next two majors are both at Augusta.
Mm-hmm.
And that our immediate reaction was, because we all saw what Tiger did in 97 to Augusta, and he overpowered it. And so he does this to a place like Winged Foot. Will he be able to do it? Everybody is now saying, well, he's good. Nobody can beat him in Augusta now, because all he'll do is hit it, you know, 360 and blah, blah, blah. And if he could putt that way on those greens at Winged Foot, he can do it at Augusta. Well, now we're going to get a chance to see twice in a row whether that actually is true.
Again, I think it's yet to be seen. I mean, I think it's a very, what's the word I'm looking for, ambitious idea for him to think he can do what he did at Winged Foot at Augusta.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he might be able to do it. You know, if we see that, you know, will the people at Augusta National make some changes? I would think they might, but I don't know what they can change.
They will. It's Augusta. They'll figure something out to do. They're not going to let somebody do that to their golf course.
But there's a lot more involved. I mean, there's involved so many things involved with what he did at Winged Foot,
right?
Too. I mean, you could go back and, were the lies in the rough? Did he get fortunate with a lot of those?
Yeah.
And granted, he was closer to the green, and yes, it made it easier. But did he get some breaks? Because you have to get breaks in order to win
anywhere.
Anywhere. So right. I mean, it's a much bigger combination than just hitting it a long way. I mean, players that have hit it a long way have done very well at Augusta over the years anyway.
Yeah.
So is it going to make that much of a difference? I don't know.
We'll find out. We'll find out in November. All right. It's so great talking to you. I can't thank you enough. I'm so happy we were able to do this. And I promise you it will not be as long a stretch before I talk to you again. You're so great. Thanks, pal.
Well, I appreciate it, Matthew. And I didn't even have to agree with you. I just automatically agreed with you.
Yeah, see? Well, that's why I feel the way I do about you. If you didn't agree with me, I wouldn't like you. So, you know. Take good care. Be safe, pal.
All right. Take care.
Okay. See ya. Mark Carnevale. How good was that, Sean? Wow. All right. That'll do it. It's quite a show. And Perry French again. Who knew? I want to thank, of course, our great partners, as always, Man of War Golf, French Lick Resort, Lexington Parks and Rec, Edwin Watts Golf Shops, Dan Cummins in Paris and Georgetown, Clark's Pump and Shop, Commonwealth Credit Union, and NFP Insurance. And I'll say it again, I say it all the time, every single one of these places are people that I do business with. And they're all fantastic, every single one. We'll be back with you next week right here. Backspin Golf on ESPN Sports Radio 1392.5. Stay tuned. We got a couple of really good shows coming up. The Bottom Line and the Angelo Show. See you next week.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Lexington Parks and Recreation. Book your tee time at one of their five public courses at lexingtonky.gov. Play Golf Lexington.